Abba Father, thank you so much for your grace and for your mercy and for providing this time for us once again to sit down and talk about the things that we see as being so crucial to our Messianic communities. Right now, Janelle and I are to talk about the Galatians and what they faced and how the drama triangle applied there. We ask that you would give us concentration and the ability to recall the things that are important that the people who will be listening to this will need to hear. Mm-hmm. By your grace alone, we will do what you've asked us to do. We commend this time to you in Yeshua's name, asking that he command his angels concerning us and cover us during this time.
I agree.
Amen and amen. Well, Janelle and I are sitting down once again to talk about the situation with the Galatians. We've given you a basic understanding of the drama triangle and the way it plays out in communities today, we hope. And now we'd like to just take a little bit of time and apply it to a situation that's described in Scripture.
Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, as we were working through some drama triangle situations within our community, it came up just perfectly that there was a perceived drama triangle going on in the book of Galatians, as Paul, or Shaul, was writing to the congregation in Galatia, very stridently in some parts, very concerned about a different gospel that was being preached there. And he was very concerned for his Gentile believers who were in that particular synagogue at the time.
And we know that in many ways this has been interpreted as Shaul or Paul speaking against Torah and speaking against the former ways of doing things. Mm-hmm. And as we've understood it, that really isn't the case.
Right.
But that maybe is part of that perception of whether he was being a persecutor as he came in and maybe being perceived as attacking what they were saying versus clarifying.
Yeah. It's really important to be putting... As one is reading the book of Galatians, to be reading it in context,
mm-hmm.
Especially a Hebrew context,
yes.
And a first century context. And what was going on was that the Gentiles who were coming to faith in Messiah, Yeshua, en masse, were understanding that they needed to be in the synagogues on Shabbats and listening to Moses, mm-hmm. being taught. That's clear from the book of Acts, that's what was expected, to even, you know, have fellowship with the Jewish members of the synagogues. What is misunderstood a lot of times is that when Paul is speaking out against circumcision in the book of Galatians,
mm-hmm.
that primarily, he is referring to a ritual, a man-made ritual,
right.
that the Jewish leaders of the day had devised, because the Jews understood that one only entered into covenant with God through being Jewish. You were either born Jewish, son of Abraham, or you went through this man-made ritual of becoming a proselyte to become Jewish. And so that was the different, or the other gospel that Paul was speaking out against in this book of Galatians.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying, no, if you have faith in Messiah Yeshua, you're in the covenant. Gentile believers in Yeshua, you don't need to go through a man-made ritual to be ensured that you are in covenant with God. You're already in.
Right. Based on faith. Grafted in by faith.
Right.
Romans 11.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we see this as a situation that's playing out once again today, in our day, as Gentiles are again hearing the call of Teshuvah to return and to come into Torah. And once again, there seems to be an ongoing debate of what does it take to come fully into Torah and into obedience and salvation.
Right. And just as there was, back in the first century, a situation of the Jewish people being very concerned about maintaining their Jewish identity. Mm-hmm. I see that that is still going on today and has throughout the centuries because of all of the persecution and mm-hmm. pogroms that have been done against the Jewish people.
Sure. And we would support maintaining their identity.
Yes.
But also understanding that Yehuda is one part. There are two branches
mm-hmm.
and two sticks being brought together and all the companions.
Right. And for both Judah and Israel, or Jew and Gentile, it's the faith in Messiah that gets you into the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's Romans 11.
Mm-hmm.
So as we were looking and discussing the book of Galatians, and as we were discussing the drama triangle situation that had occurred in our own community, it just dovetailed perfectly into the book of Galatians, saying, as we asked ourselves, is there a drama triangle going on in this book?
Mm-hmm.
So as we looked at the couple of people groups or individuals that were involved here, mm-hmm. We discovered that we have what I'll refer to as the influencers, as Tim Haig has coined it in his study on the book of Galatians. The influencers, which were the Jewish people in the synagogue, whether they were believers or not, or they could have been Gentiles who had already gone through the proselyte conversion, thus they were technically, according to the Jews, Jewish people.
Right, and they would be invested in maintaining the requirement that other people also go through that standard.
Right.
And just as a reminder, too, when we're looking at victim, persecutor, rescuer drama pictures, it can be one or more person in a position. It can be a group in each position,
right,
too, not just an individual.
Right. So we have the influencers. Then we have the Gentile believers mm-hmm. who have not gone through the proselyte ritual. And then we have Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So
the outside agitator.
Yeah. Perceived agitator. But we have the influencers who, on the surface, appear to be very concerned about these Gentile believers who are coming into their congregation. And so they are telling these new believers in Yeshua that they really need to become proselytes in order to fully ensure that they're in the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
So as we were talking about this particular group, the influencers, you know, we talked about, well, where could they be then on the drama triangle?
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, they actually could fill a couple positions. They certainly could be viewed as rescuers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you poor Gentile believers in Yeshua. You think you're in, but you're really not.
Mm-hmm.
Here, let us help you, and let's show you the true way how to get in.
Right, to come into the fullness of your possession.
Right, mm-hmm. and then you won't have any worries.
Mm-hmm.
You won't have to worry about it, so let us help you with this.
Mm-hmm.
So they could be viewed as rescuers. However, they could also be viewed as persecutors.
Yes.
Again, we have to go back to the context that this is happening in. And when we were talking about first century
dynamics,
first century dynamics, we have to remember that everybody is under the thumb of the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Roman Empire had a empirical religion, which had to do with emperor worship.
Right.
The only people group who were not required to worship the emperor were the Jews. Number of reasons there, but basically the Jews were so adamant about their faith that they would die before they would worship the emperor.
Mm-hmm. So they were grandfathered in, so to speak, as
right.
the phrase goes now. Okay, you keep doing what you're doing, but everybody else has to obey our rules and worship the emperor as God.
Right. So if Rome went into another country, another nation, and conquered that particular nation, then they would be required to worship the emperor. But it was only the Jews who fought so adamantly against that.
Mm-hmm.
The Romans just decided it's not worth the mm-hmm. trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and worship your God.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there were a lot of economic situations going on there. The Roman Empire did recognize that the Jewish people were hard workers, mm-hmm. and they did provide a lot of
stability, industrious, yes. good money managers.
Yes. So there were also some economic reasons, besides political, that they just decided to leave the Jews on their own and let them worship their God and mm-hmm. not force them into this.
They're not a stiff-necked, stubborn people for nothing.
No. So the Jews were very concerned that they did not have the eye of Rome looking at them too closely. Mm-hmm. So when this huge influx of Gentiles started coming into the synagogues, this proved to be a difficult situation for the synagogue leaders. You have too many Gentile believers coming into the synagogue, and Rome is going to start to notice,
right.
because they are not getting their tithing to the empire or to the emperor. And depending upon the Gentile, it could have been a way to avoid everything that was involved with the emperor worship.
Right, if they weren't serious about the faith, but they just wanted to escape those burdens.
Right. So the influencers could also be viewed as persecutors in the fact that they really had the say on whether they were going to tell Rome, yes, these Gentile believers in Messiah Yeshua are indeed part of our synagogue, or they could say, you know what? They haven't gone through the proselyte ritual, so no, they aren't true members, and could basically throw them out to the wolves of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
So
there was political expediency mm-hmm, involved here, too.
Mm-hmm. So when Paul is exhorting the Galatians, the Galatian believers, not to go through the proselyte rituals, he really is asking a lot of them, because if they did not worship the emperor, they would be killed. And if the Jews in the synagogue were to point their fingers at them and say they really are not true members of the synagogue,
they're not one of us,
they would be faced with, one, either going back into emperor worship and thus betraying Messiah Yeshua, or two, going through the proselyte ritual, which in effect Paul is saying would be the same thing as denying Yeshua, because they would then be placing their faith in a man-made ritual instead of in the faith in Messiah, which gets them into the covenant. So a very difficult situation there for the Gentile believers.
Between the proverbial rock and hard place.
Exactly, exactly. So there we have the influencers who could be viewed as persecutors or rescuers. And then we have the Gentile Galatians who believe in Messiah Yeshua, who could be viewed as the victims. You know, they could take on that victim role. Oh my, what am I going to do?
Who shall I believe?
Who should I believe?
Paul, that traveling teacher who came through and he's gone now. Or these people who are here and I see on a regular basis.
Right. And if they were taking in what the influencers were telling them, then fear bonds could be growing there. Mm-hmm. Oh my, I'm in trouble. I better be doing this. So there would be a chance for them to really play the victim role up pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And they could be, in fact, true victims, in that if they were considered outside the covenant, then they would be persecuted by Rome.
Yes. And then we have Paul. So as you are looking at the drama triangle, if you wanted to go ahead and draw a triangle with the point down at the bottom, persecutor up in the upper left and rescuer in the upper right, and then victim down at the bottom point, you've got the influencers up at the top in both positions, persecutor and rescuer.
Possibly both positions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, without really knowing their heart, we don't know for sure.
Right. And the bottom position then being the Galatian Gentile believers.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Paul. So where does Paul fit into this? I mean, he gets quite strident in some of his words, you know, "Oh, foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you?"
Mm-hmm.
And
he doesn't mince words at
all.
No,
he doesn't. In fact, at one point, he basically tells them concerning circumcision, meaning the proselyte ritual. They've already basically gone through that circumcision. I wish they'd go all the way and castrate themselves. I mean, he's not pulling any punches here. He's quite blunt, but that is because of his great concern for his flock.
Right.
So as we were discussing this in community and going through the drama triangle and talking about all of this, you know, the question was, is Paul a persecutor?
Mm-hmm.
And our community was right on the spot with this because we've been talking about this. So they were good and got this right. And they said, no, Paul could be perceived as a persecutor, but really he is detached from the drama triangle play.
Mm-hmm.
He is outside the drama triangle, looking into what is going on, and he is addressing the situation by exhorting and encouraging and bringing them back to scriptural truth and reminding them, you have the Spirit which is given when you confess faith in Messiah Yeshua. Remember, remember, remember.
Mm-hmm.
And go on what I have taught you, what you have learned from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So in that clear message, he is taking a stand, and he's taking it very stridently.
Yes.
We also thought and understood that some people might perceive him as a rescuer, as well as a persecutor who is coming in and speaking against what the influences are doing. He could also be perceived as a rescuer, just trying to pull the Gentiles over to his side, to be beholden to him rather
mm-hmm.
than to the local people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we know that you know, as we've studied through the book, we know that Paul, several times, you know, he has been accused. He has borne stripes
mm-hmm.
for Messiah Yeshua and his work. We know that he is very personally involved with every single person and congregation that he has, you know, come in contact with and taught.
Right.
You know, these are his...
He is a father to them.
Yeah, these are his children.
Right.
And at one point in the book of Galatians, you know, he says, you know, don't give me any more grief because my body bears the stripes already of what I've suffered for Messiah Yeshua.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not in this for my own gain.
Right.
Whereas he also makes a case, at least implicitly, that the influencers are in it for their own gain.
Exactly. And in fact, Paul does state in Galatians, if we look at chapter 4, verse 17, he states, and this is the NIV translation, those people, meaning the influencers, those people are zealous to win you over, but for no good. What they want is to alienate you from us so that you may be zealous for them. It's fine to be zealous, provided the purpose is good, and to be so always and not just when I am with you. So he recognizes that the influencer's motives are not completely genuine for the Gentiles.
Mm-hmm.
But because of all of these other factors, Rome breathing down their neck, you know, if we have too many Gentiles coming in, we're going to have trouble.
Mm-hmm.
We'll lose our Jewish identity,
sort of being watered down by the lack of understanding of Torah. And we can well understand that. That is a serious concern.
So Paul recognizes that their motive isn't entirely pure. But to going on in verse 19, here's Paul's motive. My dear children, for whom I am again in the pains of childbirth, until Messiah is formed in you. How I wish I could be with you now and change my tone, because I am perplexed about you. Mm-hmm. So he does view them as children. Mm-hmm. So as a parent has the good of the child in mind, that is Paul's motive. And certainly his highest motive above all is Messiah Yeshua.
Mm-hmm.
So it's his desire that the Gentile believers in Galatia understand that it's not a man-made ritual that gets you in covenant. It's faith in Messiah that gets you in. So, even though he could be viewed as a persecutor or a rescuer, really, he is not on the drama triangle. However, he is definitely speaking into the situation in order to correct this different gospel that is being taught and to head it off at the pass before these dear children of his decide to go into this proselyte ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And
that is our understanding, that the ones he was writing to had not yet made
right,
the decision.
Right.
So one wonders how this came to Paul's attention, that they were in the midst of this dilemma.
Yeah, and I don't think we really got into that.
Mm-mm.
In the study.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that there were letters going on. Certainly Galatia is not the only congregation where this was coming about.
Mm-hmm.
This was going on in Jerusalem as well.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere in the diaspora where you would find a Jewish synagogue, and where you would find a Gentile who had come to the understanding of Messiah Yeshua and then, you know, moved in to join the synagogue as they were being taught.
Exactly.
So we don't know exactly how Paul heard about this situation, but obviously it came to his attention and he's very concerned and is addressing the situation diligently and stridently and with much heart.
Mm-hmm. And as long as we understand that intensity and stridency does not automatically make a persecutor,
right,
we can receive it. But as we've seen in circumstances here locally, we would imagine, human nature being what it is, that there are probably people then, too, who would have had a hard time knowing how to take what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they weren't used to being spoken to stridently, or maybe they had some kind of history of abuse which made them more vulnerable or more sensitive, and they would have a hard time knowing how to take that.
Right. Especially from the Gentile believer's perspective, oh, Dad's mad at us, you know, could possibly be one of their responses. But then again, what about the influencers? They're being spoken against too.
Oh, yes.
They're being spoken against in this letter. He doesn't come right out and point fingers at specific people, but it's quite clear that, let's say that if I were one of these influencers, I would know that he was speaking against me.
Right, because he was very clear about the subject and the content of what's being taught.
Right.
Even if not by name.
You know, and it is in the book of Galatians where we talk about the fruit of the Spirit. And just prior to talking about the fruit of the Spirit, there's a whole list of very undesirable characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
As far as lifestyle, where we're talking about envying and strife and division and factions, all kinds of things.
Boasting,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Paul is speaking against these things. And as we were looking at these words and what they mean, you know, basically the influencers could have been jockeying for a position. And as Paul's letter comes in and they're reading it, because I'm sure they did read it, I could just see the hair on the back of their necks go up, you know, just like a cat, you know, row, you know, he's speaking against us. Look at this. You know, we're all human and flesh gets in there. And I'm sure that the influencers were not very happy with what Paul had to say.
And therefore they would view him as a persecutor and themselves as victims.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this because your viewpoint about who is a persecutor and who is a victim varies depending where you stand.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Micaiah the prophet who was told, "Oh, you troubler of Israel"? But it was really, "No, you, the king, who are the troubler,
right.
Not me."
Right. Yeah. So as we have talked about when we're going through talking about drama triangles and stuff, it really does depend upon where a person is at maturity-wise and what things have happened in the past that may influence through certain distortions,
mm-hmm.
how a message is received,
mm-hmm.
and then how you view the person who is giving that message,
mm-hmm.
whether as a persecutor or whether I'm going to, you know, take the victim role, etc.
Yes, yes, and one of the crucial issues has to do with the quality of the relationship, and we've seen that so much in our community, that if you know the person and the relationship, the bonds, the love, the concern, looking for Messiah in the person to trust, not the person, because humanly we can all make errors, but knowing the heart, that causes one to cling to that relationship and to stand firm against anything that would be trying to divide you or to speak badly about that person.
Right.
You can say no. They may have been able to say, no, we know Paul. We know Shaul. We know his heart. He would not be doing something that's divisive. He would
mm-hmm.
not be doing something that's causing trouble. We know Messiah in him and through him. Therefore, we need to listen to what he has to say.
Right.
Those people who didn't have such a close relationship with him wouldn't have that constricting factor.
Mm-hmm.
They would not be able to look for Messiah and the Spirit in him. They would just be reacting, as you said, out of their flesh, most
right.
likely.
Yeah.
And again, we want to make that distinction out of the carnal flesh, because obviously we are human and we do have to deal with the mind, will, and emotions, the body that we're given. We're not saying that all flesh is bad, only to the extent that your flesh is not in submission to the Spirit and the calling and the understanding.
Right. You know, as we work through these issues within our own community, you know, we're rejoicing in the fact that now these, when things do pop up, that we're taking care of them more in real time,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, a week or two at the most before something is addressed and talked about and worked out, whereas before it was like several months.
Oh, and long time ago, sometimes it was even years.
Even years, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or the baggage that people brought from before.
Right. But I'm just thinking about, wow, here Paul, I mean, we're talking long distance
mm-hmm.
and horseback at the most, or caravans to be delivering mail, you know,
mm-hmm.
how much more difficult it would have been to be working in real time to be addressing any of these triangulation type issues.
Mm-hmm.
He said, she said.
Mm-hmm. How difficult it is to shepherd from a distance.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and in that respect, that's when we do have to fully rely upon the Spirit to be working
mm-hmm.
in each of the people involved
mm-hmm.
so that they, you know, that the Spirit is prompting.
Mm-hmm. And during this time period, we would have had house fellowships, and so there would have been probably many small groups,
mm-hmm.
and it would take time for all the truth of the matter to kind of sift through and to reach all the ears of the people involved.
Yeah.
And I think that would take some time too. But then they aren't used to the 24-hour turnaround time that we are in our society now, with the, you know, the advent of fax machine and textings and things that instant communication is expected.
Right.
They had a much slower time frame.
Mm-hmm.
That may have allowed cooler heads to prevail too at times, rather than having an emotional reaction at the moment.
Yeah, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is I guess, a smattering of our understanding of how the drama triangle might have applied in the Galatians community. We hope that it's been of use. Thank you, Janelle, for taking the time.
Sure.
And now we'll return to our group discussion.